This is Digital Story Podcast number 596, August 8th, 2017. Today's theme is It All Starts With the Bag. I'm Derek Story. When we're in the great outdoors, open space is a thing of beauty. But in our daily lives, it's a rare commodity. Countertops, desks, closets, and garages tend to be filled to the brim. This tends to hold true for our suitcases and, yes, our camera bags as well. And before you know it, we're lugging around extra pounds that we just don't need. But there is a simple solution, and that's the topic for today's show. So a few months ago, I grabbed my bag, my work bag, on my way to work. I was out the door, and I thought to myself, man, this is pretty heavy. And I've had other people pick up my bag and going, whoa, dude, I thought you were the nimble photographer. You think this is heavy? You should have seen what I was carrying around a few years ago. In comparison, it is light. But then again, there is a lot of stuff in there. When I got to work, I spread out all the contents on the table, on my work table. And it was pretty amazing as I just stood there and looked at it. And I'm going, I'm carrying all of that around with me? There were too many cameras, too many lenses, extra cables, batteries, card readers, chargers, and more. Looking inside my bag, you think that I was heading off across the Atlantic, not cross town to my office. Why was I carrying all of that? Was this a leftover from my days as a wedding photographer when we needed to have backups for our backups? And that's no joke. And any of you that are wedding photographers out there, you know exactly what I mean. Those days are over, and I think it's really time to slim down. So here's what I did. I came up with a plan to travel a bit lighter for just my day-to-day operations, for, you know, going to work, for going out to meetings, for, you know, short trips, all that kind of stuff. You know, just the sort of stuff that we do in the week. And I have a five-point plan, right? Five-point plan for slimming down, for putting my shoulder bag on a diet. And I thought I'd share that with you this week. Okay, the first thing, and this is just so obvious, but yet it makes me laugh every time I think about it. It all starts with a smaller bag. I mean, seriously, you know, when I was talking earlier about, you know, garage and desk space and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there is this sort of human nature thing where we don't like to have, you know, empty space in our environment. We tend to fill things up. So on your desk, you tend to cover the whole desk with stuff. In the garage, we tend to use every bit of space. And in our camera bags, we tend to do the same thing. You go, hey, I've got space to carry this. I'm just going to throw this in, and then I'm going to throw this in and throw this in. And then before you know it, you know, you're carrying around a 25-pound bag just for your day-to-day operation when you probably really don't need to. So the first thing that I did in my master plan here was switch to a smaller bag. And you've heard me talk about the Retrospective 7. Yes, I've been working on this story for a while. You heard me talking about the Retrospective 7 a bit over the last month or two. Well, that was the bag that I switched to. I had the larger bags that held a lot more, that held bigger laptops and more cameras and all that. And I literally was filling them up. Now, here's what's funny. Even after I switched to the Retrospective 7, I was overpacking that bag because I was going, okay, I can live without this and this, but I really should have this, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, and I can find space for it right here. And again, I have to laugh at myself, right? Because those first couple weeks, I'd be looking at the Retrospective 7 from across the room and going, man, that thing's kind of, you know, bulgy looking, kind of poofy looking. It still needs to go on a diet. I still have too much stuff in there. So I guess my point is on even when you switch to a smaller bag, it still takes a little time to, you know, to kind of work your way down, right? You just, you know, the bag is the first step, and some things stay out of it because it is a smaller bag. But then if you're anything like me, you'll probably overpack it a bit on the first few attempts. But you've got to start with the smaller bag, regardless of what it is and who makes it, whether it's Think Tank or Low Pro or Tenba, whoever you love in the world of bags, get a smaller version. Step one, okay? Then the next thing is, this is where I had to overcome my old wedding photographer thing, is that you only need one of each. So really, I only need, you know, one Micro Four Thirds camera or one, you know, DSLR. I don't need to have, you know, a backup for my Micro Four Thirds camera when I'm just, you know, walking around, when I'm just, you know, living life. And I'll kind of get to why that is here in a later point. But for the moment, you really only need one of each. So the exception would be batteries. Okay, that I carry two. I carry one in the camera and then I carry an extra battery. But in terms of actual camera, I have one camera in the bag right now, one Micro Four Thirds camera, and that's the Pen F. And that camera works great for this sort of thing. And then another camera of mine now is the DJI Spark. And that's my aerial camera. And that thing's really light and that fits in there. And then, you know, film cameras where I really struggled because I love SLR film cameras. I just think they're beautiful and I love looking through those glass pentaprism optical viewfinders and all that. But it just didn't make sense for me to carry around a big DSLR all the time when I have these really wonderful compact film cameras. I have a Contax T2 and I have an Olympus Stylus, both of them very compact, and the Olympus Stylus is very light. And that just fits in like a nice little side area. So I switched to that. Now I still have the SLRs out around the studio and I have one at the house. And so what I discovered, and again, I'll touch on this a bit more in a minute here, I don't have to have the SLR with me in my bag all the time to shoot film. I can have it out on the drafting table in the studio. Something happens and I can grab it and use it. And this was a bit of a behavioral change for me, you know, thinking this way, that I didn't have to have everything with me all the time. So I have the Olympus Pen and just three lenses. Okay, but listen to these three lenses. The 14 to 42 EZ zoom, right? That's a pancake lens, right? The Panasonic 20mm f1.7, that is another pancake lens. And then the lens cap 9mm fisheye. So those are the three lenses I have. You know, you stack all three of them up on top of each other and they're still shorter than most lenses out there, far and away. And now, does that mean those are the only lenses I use? No, this is the point. They're the lenses I just carry with me. So I have a prime lens, I have a zoom lens, and I have a fisheye lens. Anything else, I move my feet, or I can always go get a different lens because I do have other lenses. I carry those with me, and then I carry the compact film camera, and I carry the Spark. And that covers my visual stuff. Remember, I still have an iPhone in my pocket, which takes pretty darn good pictures. So the idea is that you really only need, you know, one of each of these things, except for batteries, and then, of course, you know, a couple lenses. But before, I was carrying like six and seven lenses, and I just wasn't using them. Next thing, tablets and small laptops are just fine for home. Okay, when I'm at work, I have real computers at work that I can use. So I'm using one right now as I record this. When I'm at home, I shouldn't be working all the time. I still do some work at home, but I try not to do too much. Tonight will be an exception because on Monday nights I stay up late editing the podcast. But normally when I get home from work, I have some dinner. I'll probably check email, and then that's it for the night. And then the next morning, you know, before I come into the office, I'll publish a few things because I'm on the West Coast, but you know, that's just Facebook and Twitter and stuff. And for those sort of things, I don't need, you know, my 15-inch MacBook Pro. And I discovered that I could get an 11-inch MacBook Air. The screen isn't as nice. It isn't a Retina display, but it's super light, and it takes care of email, and it takes care of Facebook, and it takes care of Twitter. And I can even edit the podcast on it. It's very powerful. It's smaller. And it works great. And it takes up very little room in the bag. Now, I could also use an iPad, essentially, for the same thing, except for editing the podcast. I could do it on the iPad, but it's so much easier on a laptop. So, you know, the idea is that I don't need to have my best computers with me all the time, that I can use these lightweight appliances for email, for web browsing, for social, and it's absolutely fine. And in fact, it probably keeps me from working too much at home, because what I'm trying to do is, you know, save my work for work, and when I'm at home, interact with people. Enjoy the environment that I have there. Enjoy the house, you know, things like that. So that to me was a bit of a revelation. Now, I had to wait a long time to find that laptop. I wanted to get an 11-inch MacBook Air for the longest time, and they were just too pricey for my budget. Finally, B&H had this huge sale on them. I posted it on Twitter and Facebook. These 11-inch MacBook Airs that were fully decked, they were the latest ones, and they were like $800. So then I could afford that. That was my computer for that year. I got that, and that has really changed a lot of things. That's a lot of weight, that laptop. Okay, so that was point number three. Tablets and laptops are just fine for home. You don't need to have your best stuff with you all the time. Number four, and this was a biggie. Remember earlier when I was talking about the bulgies when I first switched to the Retrospective 7? Well, a lot of that bulge was coming from that front pocket area on it. And that's a really nice front pocket. I love that area in the front. But point number four is leave room for temporary items, such as your lunch, paperwork, something that you might be shuttling back and forth on that particular day for from home to office, you know, that kind of stuff. You need to have an open pocket for that sort of stuff, because if you don't, you end up carrying, guess what, another bag. And you're going the wrong direction then. So I had to let go of stuff that I was putting in that front pocket so that front pocket could be empty. So then if I'm taking a sandwich and some carrots for lunch, those I can just throw in the front pocket. If I have some paperwork that was delivered home and I need to take it to the office, I can just throw it in there. And then when I get to the office, I take that stuff out, right? The sandwich goes in the fridge or whatever, and that front pocket's empty again. So having that front pocket remain empty, except for temporary items, keeps me from having to have another bag. And it's really super handy. And then the nice part about it is the bag looks so much better most of the time because it's not all bulgy. You know, then that flap comes down nice and secure over the front and it looks all, you know, svelte, and it's just beautiful. So having a temporary space leaves some, and you know, that is against our nature, right? We want to fill everything up. Try to leave a pocket open. Now, the thing that makes us all work is point number five, which is creating an organized storage system so that you can quickly interchange bag items for different situations. And I'll give you the perfect example. It happened this Saturday. I had to go down to San Rafael, and I had a couple things going on down there. And one of the things that I had going on down there was taking some lenses in for repair. So there's a wonderful camera shop in San Rafael called Seawood, and I just dig them so much, and they have a great camera repairman. I used my temporary front pocket to put three lenses in the front that needed repair, and they were Yashica lenses where the aperture linkage had broken, so the aperture wasn't changing. So I just put them in beer cozies, soft drink cozies, slid them in the front pocket, so that took care of that. And then I wasn't going to be flying the Spark in downtown San Rafael, but I do like downtown San Rafael, and I like doing some street shooting there. So then the pocket where I have the Spark inside my Retrospective 7, I pulled that out, and then I put a Contax film camera in there, the 139Q with a little zoom lens that I really like. So the Spark came out, I had the Contax ready to go, and I just dropped it in there. And then I was in downtown San Rafael. I was able to take some shots. I dropped off the lenses. when I got back to the studio at the end of the day, then the contacts comes back out, right? Because I'm not doing more film shooting. I'm getting ready to go home. So then I just drop the spark back in there. And I have a nice cabinet, and we've had some conversations on Facebook about storage units for your camera gear, but I have a locking safe in a cabinet where I keep my stuff. And I'll tell you, they're great. They just give you that extra level of security. You know, anyone can get into anything if they have long enough, but a safe will really slow people down. And, you know, mine's bolted down so they can't, you know, carry it out the door or anything. The safe stays here. So in that safe, the way that I use it is that I have camera bags, old camera bags, little ones, you know, not real big ones. One has my favorite analog gear in it. One has my favorite digital gear in it, like my Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II. That's in there. And that's in there with some of the other lenses that I really like. And it's sort of all organized in the safe. So let's say it's time to change out. Let's say that I'm going to go do a shoot for a client. Well, obviously, I'm going to need more gear than just my light bag. So I have a bag in there that's loaded up for client shoots. Or if I'm going to go take a hike or something, I have, you know, a longer lens in there that I might want to grab for the hike. But it's all organized and it's all easy to get to. So then what happens is the bag that you're carrying around, think of it like a car. You know, you don't have everything you own in the car as you go back and forth to work and pick up the kids and all that. You put the stuff in it that you need to transport. And the camera bag is the same way. I don't know how I ran off the road on this concept way back when, thinking that my camera bag needed to have more in it all the time than it really does. It's just like the car. And, you know, I don't want the trunk of my car full all the time. I want the trunk of my car empty or close to empty so that when I need to put something in it, I can. And then when I get there, I take it out and, you know, then the trunk is empty again. So if you think of your camera bag more like the car, in that it is a vehicle for moving stuff around that you need then that day, not all the time, suddenly you go, wow, light bulb goes on. This is pretty cool. And then if you have a system that makes it easy to pull what you need out, in this case, you know, the camera safe, then you just pull out what you need, you put the other stuff in, off you go. So that is the way that I was able to slim down. Now, my camera bag now weighs almost half that I was carrying before I started on this diet, before I did this gear diet. I have to tell you, it's really nice. And, you know, and still some people think that my bag is heavy even now, but it's not. I tell you, it's not. And for me, it's not. I can have it on my shoulder all the time and I'm just perfectly fine. I can just be walking around, standing there talking to somebody at a coffee shop for 15 minutes. You know, I don't have to sit down. I don't have to take the bag off my shoulder. I just leave it on my shoulder as I'm chatting folks up because, first of all, I want to keep an eye on it, but second of all, because it's not straining my shoulder. It all starts with the bag. I know this is really obvious on some level, but I hope there's a few gems in here that maybe you can maybe lighten your load a bit too. It feels great. It's like losing weight. It just feels fantastic. Advice for eclipse newbies. So we haven't talked about the eclipse on the podcast. I've done a few posts about it on our Facebook page, on our Digital Story Facebook page. But you know, we should talk about it. It's only 2 weeks away and there is a little bit of prep work involved for the solar eclipse that's coming on August 21st. And I ran across this really good article on The Atlantic called Advice for Eclipse Newbies. It's a simple piece. It's not a complicated piece, but I think it really sort of captures the essence of what we need to be thinking about as we're getting ready to do this. Now, if you're in North America, if you're in the United States, chances are that you're either in the belt where you're going to have the opportunity to see the full eclipse on the morning of August 21st, or you're going to be in an area that's going to get a nice partial. Like, for instance, I'm in Santa Rosa, California, and we're going to get something like an 82% eclipse here. Not a total eclipse, which I understand is the coolest thing in the world, and a partial eclipse does not compare to it. Believe me, I've read all the articles. However, I have a commercial shoot later that day. Who schedules a commercial shoot on the day of an eclipse? Well, obviously one of my clients does. So I have a commercial shoot later that day. That might be weird, huh? That might be really weird. Ooh. Oh, I don't know. We'll see if the world is still, in one piece that afternoon. Anyway, in the morning, I'm going to watch the solar eclipse like everyone else. I got my glasses ordered. They should be here in a day or so. And I just thought that this article was really cool just to help us start thinking about things. And I'll just read you a couple sentences from this article. Be sure to bring appropriate viewing glasses, a pair of glasses for each member of the group. They are pretty cheap and sharing can be problematic in the moment. And think about that, like, because the eclipse itself, if you've seen the total eclipse, it's only 2.5 minutes or something. So, and I don't know how your friends and family are, but my family, you know, someone has the glasses and you're going, hey, I'd like to borrow them. Hey, just wait. You go, it's almost over. So you don't want that. So everyone should have their own glasses. And you can get 5 packs of these glasses for, I think, like $10 or something. And I have a link to the B&H Solar Eclipse Resources page in the show notes, and it has all that stuff. But anyway, just as totality nears, it gets very exciting. So everyone needs to have their own glasses. Then they also say bring additional batteries and cards for the cameras, and a tripod really helps a lot. If you're going to photograph that, then you need a solar filter also. Again, this B&H Resources page has all the stuff you need, has videos on how to photograph the eclipse, all the gear you need, although I would order the gear pretty soon. I've noticed that Amazon is pretty much sold out of a lot of the gear that we need, the glasses and so forth. B&H must have bought a boatload of this stuff because they're still shipping same day or next day on the glasses and the solar filters and all that. But you probably don't want to cut it too close, right? If nothing else, you have to pay more for shipping instead of getting it for free on Super Saver. So anyway, I have a link to the B&H Photo Solar Eclipse Resources page where it has all sorts of good stuff. And then I also have the link to this article, Advice for Eclipse Newbies, on The Atlantic. You know, one of the things that I would do if you have a job, an office job or whatever, is I would start talking to my boss soon about, hey, the morning of the 21st, can I take my lunch early? Can I take my lunch at 10 or whatever? Because I really want to go outside and see the eclipse. And then if you get the go-ahead on that, then you might want to start scouting a spot now, and maybe at your 10 o'clock break, you can kind of look around for a good spot, see where the sun is and all that, so that you know exactly where to go once you're sprung, so you can go out and enjoy that eclipse and have your glasses with you, and if you're lucky, even your camera. You and thousands of other people will be photographing it. I'm not as concerned about photographing it because I know there's going to be tons of great pictures. But I do want to see it in real time. So anyway, I hope these couple resources help you and get you start thinking to be ready for the 21st. This is a fun thing and doesn't come around very often. And, you know, it's something to talk about. Tell your grandkids and all that good stuff. Introducing Cascaball 3, the professional Wi-Fi camera remote. So we have a new sponsor for the rest of August, Cascaball, and this is cool. You guys are going to have fun with this, you guys and gals both. Well, let me just read you a little bit, because the first time I do a spot, I always want to sort of, you know, set the table, and then we'll drill down into some of the cooler functions over the next couple weeks. Here's what they say about it. Unlock the potential of your compatible Canon, Fujifilm, Nikon, Olympus, Panasonic, or Sony Wi-Fi enabled camera with Cascaball. And by the way, it's spelled C-A-S-C-A-B-L-E. C-A-S-C-A-B-L-E, but it's pronounced Cascaball. Built for the professional and amateur photographer alike, Cascaball is the best tool available for working with your camera in the field. So what is it? Okay, it's an iOS app that you load onto your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod Touch. You turn on the Wi-Fi to your camera, and then you connect. Okay, so far you're going, well, I already have an Olympus app that does that, or a Panasonic app that does that. Yes, you do. You do have an app that already connects your camera to your mobile device. However, Cascaball does a lot of stuff, and chances are very good that the app that you have right now can't do some of the things that I'm going to talk about here. And again, I'm just doing the overview right now. Okay, we're going to start drilling down next week. But let me just give you the overview. All right, so you can set your camera's exposure settings. They have something called Shutter Robot Automation Tool. So that includes a self-timer, a bulb timer, an interferometer, and exposure bracketing. You can work smart in low light conditions because they have a night theme, so you don't lose your night vision. You can put your shutter right on your wrist if you have an Apple Watch, because they also have an Apple Watch app that allows you to use your Apple Watch as a remote trigger. Now we start getting into some of the things that's crazy. You can download full resolution images to your iOS device straight from your camera, one at a time or in batches. And you have control over how you download them. So for instance, if you're shooting RAW plus JPEG, which a lot of us do, right? We've talked a lot about RAW plus JPEG. You can just download the RAW file. You can just download the JPEG file, or you can download the RAW and JPEG file. Now we're getting to some serious stuff. Are you using a neutral density filter? Well, you know what a pain in the nose it is to figure it out, your exposure. Cascaball has a built-in calculator, and it makes those calculations a snap. You start with the initial shutter speed that you want to use, and then on the next slider, you set the filter density, and then Cascaball will display the recommended shutter speed for those variables. So it figures it out for you. It does the compensation for you. Really nice. Here's another one. You want sharp stars instead of star trails. The sharp stars calculator determines the longest shutter speed that you can use at night. It's very similar to the neutral density calculator, except this time you set the focal length, you set your sensor size, and then you read the maximum shutter speed that you can use for sharp stars. How cool is that? Isn't that cool? Oh boy. All right, good stuff. So these are just a few of the things that Cascaball can do. Version 3 is out right now. I mean, we're starting this on version 3 launch date. And version 3 added Panasonic and Fuji cameras to the mix. So, you know, all these cameras that you can use, most of the cameras that I talk about, Canon, Fujifilm, Nikon, Olympus, Panasonic, and Sony, all work with this app. Now, it's available for free. You can get started for free in the iOS App Store. They have pro features. And so some of these things that I read you, some are free, some are not. So for instance, sharp stars, free. Neutral density filter calculator, free. However, the RAW JPEG or RAW plus JPEG, that's an upgrade. And I have the, you know, of the things that I talked about in the show notes, I list them either as free or upgrade so that you can see. But you can start with it for free. Now, I recommend that you go to the tile on the digital story, and there's a tile that runs across site that'll take you to our landing page. We have a landing page there, and there you can really dig into what all the features are. Now, I'm going to be talking about more of them in upcoming shows, but I wanted to give you an overview today, and then you can go explore by clicking on the tile in the digital story and go read more, and there is a lot more stuff than what I talked about. These are the things that got me excited when I first started using it. I'm using it right now with my Olympus Pen F, and it works really well. The thing that I'm most jazzed about is having control over the RAW JPEG and RAW plus JPEG. I have to tell you, that is amazing, but just a lot of good stuff here. So anyway, thanks to Cascaball for sponsoring this week's show and sponsoring the shows for the rest of August. Go take a look at it. This is a very cool app. It works very well. I'm very excited about it. All right, just a few things here that I want to touch on. First of all, I haven't talked about the Autumn in Wine Country Photography Workshop for a bit. That's coming October 26th, 27th, and 28th up here in Sonoma County. We still have a seat open. And this is where we combine learning about wine and viticulture with wine tasting, with landscape shooting in the fall in Sonoma County. And then, of course, just hanging out with each other and all the good stuff that comes with the workshop. This is going to be really fun. And this is also a workshop that's open to travel companions, where travel companions actually get to participate in key parts of the workshop. So if you want to bring your husband, your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your son, you know, whatever. Well, no, son can't wine taste unless he's 21, but you get the point. Then they can also participate in this. They don't have to be locked up in their room all day while you're at the workshop. I have a link directly to the registration page in the show notes. This is going to be a blast. This is our last physical workshop of this year, and it's going to be a good one. I'd love to finish on a flurry during workshop season. And if you're thinking about joining us, get over to that page now. You can sign up right now and reserve your seat. If you're not in a traveling mode, we have the Nimble Classroom, and we're starting on August 19th for Catalog Management and Capture One Pro. We also have classes on September 9th, Expert Editing, Capture One Pro, September 23rd, Luminar Pro Techniques, and then the October 7th class for Photos 3, that's sold out. That's sold out already, which I think is very interesting that the class for Photos sold out first. So I've added another class for Photos, and that'll be in November. And that's right there on the Nimble Classroom page. If you want to read more about it and all the other classes, just go to thenimblephotographer.com/classroom or thenimblephotographer.com, and then just click on Nimble Class in the nav bar, and you'll see all the classes that are available. But it's pretty cool that Photos was the first one to sell out. I also want to give a big thanks to our Patreon members, the folks that keep the lights on here at the Digital Story, members of our inner circle, the people who care so much about this podcast that they take a nominal ding every month on their credit card to make sure that I show up in your podcast app first thing Tuesday morning every week. Thanks so much to all of our Patreon members. Really, I cannot tell you how important you are to me and how important you are to everyone else that listens to the show. And finally, a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. These are the folks that support our podcast. These are the folks that make the paper I print on. These are the folks that just come up with creative stuff for us all to do together. They're a lot of fun, I gotta tell you. And they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. We have our own landing page there. And also they have a rocking Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Print something. Go over to their site. Look at all the stuff that you can do. Look at the greeting cards and the postcards and the panorama cards and the square cards and all that kind of stuff. All the different sizes of paper, all the different textures of paper. Find something that really gets you excited. Order it. Run it through your printer. Make something beautiful, and then you can share it with the world. Alrighty, that is going to do it for me this week. I'm traveling lighter. I have all this extra energy now because my bag is so light, which means I can just go out there and get more trouble than ever. Hope you have some fun with the topics in this week's show. Come back and join me next week. Until then, take care. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.